Let's move to the third item. And Commissioner Fish, I think you have some invited testimony up front.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Let me review the run of show, and we'll ask first Fred Miller to come forward. Fred Miller is the Chief Administrative Officer of the City of Portland. He's going to provide an introduction and lay the groundwork. Then we're going to have an invited panel from the LMCOC report. We will then have an invited panel for the CBA evaluation report.
Commissioner, I'm calling foul on the acronyms. Could you just explain for the first time what all of those letters mean for people watching at home?
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
Fred, I'm going to let you handle this. And then let me just say we have invited guests, eight speakers, who will be given three minutes each. And then the distinguished director of the Office of Equity will have a chance to speak and do some wrap-up. So, Fred, take it away.
Okay, so thank first, you. The LMCOC means?
Labor Management Committee, and what was the other you said?
CBA means?
Community Benefits Agreement.
Okay, there we are. I saw some shirts that said that, so I know that one. Fred Miller, Office of Management Finance. Two of you suggested that with the last presentation there might be a lack of headlines, and I'd like to be able to address that. It looks like lots of interest in this topic, and I want to lay some of the groundwork for how I think you might have, or how this is going to be valuable to us and what we might do in the future. Essentially, I'm here right now because the council asked that when these CBA pilots were done, that someone come back and make a report. And I think that's the reason for this meeting today, in which I'm not really a player. The reason I am personally interested in this is because it helps define the future on where the city's going to go with respect to these 1% contributions, as well as how we handle minority and women businesses and workforce. So Dante, at the end of all of this, will come up and talk a little bit about where we're headed, but I would hope that the discussion between now and the end will help illuminate where the council wants to go. And pilots are designed to learn something about a process, and I'm sure that that's the case in this when we're talking about these pilots. So let me try to focus, because I think there's some real opportunities before the city. And I think there's a positive future here if we can get all of our learnings right. And most of my jobs in the last few decades have been problem solving, where if things are easy, you don't pay any attention to them. But if there are controversies, then you think about how do you best get to a solution. And frankly, this is a good model here, because I think it's worth talking about what this session is not about, and then where I think there's agreement, probably among all parties here. And if we can focus on that, the disagreements become clear, and that's where you can where there are decisions to be made. The first thing that this hearing isn't about is Portland Building and Washington Park Reservoir, because the decisions are already been made on those things. They're proceeding. And I think in both cases, we've learned from the pilots and benefited from that. In both cases, they've gone to an alternative contracting approach rather than low bid. And again, in both cases, we've got the most aggressive goals of any projects in the city to date. So I think generally, if people understand what's happening, I think those are in good shape. But that's not today's presentation. And today, I want to talk about points of agreement. I think that there is no agreement from anyone I talk to on having aggressive goals for minority women, both businesses and workforce.
No disagreement.
No disagreement. Did I say no agreement? If I did, I'm sorry.
My hearing.
But yeah, in fact, okay. Right now, I don't know which it was, but anyway, I think we got general agreement.
General.
There's agreement that we should break down data to a more refined basis so we can see journeymen, apprentices, and so on, entered by ethnicity. I don't see any controversy on that. Second comment is I don't see any controversy on improving our data collection and what we show in terms of all the projects. Christine Moody has developed, is moving along a new software. That's been sent to the ECPC for comments. I think everyone's agreeing that a new system is a good idea and makes sense. I think, again, there is no disagreement that an alternative means of contracting produces better results than low bid. The statutes require a low bid unless there are some steps taken for you to approve an alternative approach. in which case you do something like Teresa just did, come back with the results and see if the criteria were satisfied. So the alternative method, it clearly is better. The real question, one question there, is where do you draw the line? Because it gets complicated to the alternative method, whether it's a CBA or CMGC or progressive design build.
What's CMGC?
And, pardon me?
What, tell the viewers at home what CMGC is, please.
Instruction Management General Contract. So those all produce better results, but it doesn't make sense at some low level of $100,000 contract or a million. In the CBA resolution, $15 million was the point. I'm not sure it can't go lower than that to do an alternative contract. I mean, that's a decision that you will have to make as we proceed in the future. There is disagreement on which is the best alternative method. And I think there are lots of people, if I read T-shirts correctly, who would say the CBA is the best method. Some data will show that it's comparable to other alternative methods. But if there's a point of controversy, that's one of them. But it's not that you shouldn't be comparing any of these alternatives to low bid and say, therefore, it's better. You should compare alternative methods to alternative methods. And that's essentially where we're trying to proceed as far as the city goes in the future. I think there's general agreement that we should have a focus on a pipeline of talent for the future, that just doing a project and then people having nowhere to go after being trained, and maybe not even being trained in time to do the project, isn't as successful as an alternative if we have ongoing programs where we can both train people and have a continuity of opportunity on different projects. And that's where I get encouraged here, because if I look at the region, and I personally think, I don't think there's unanimity on this, that we're better off if we can get a regional approach, because we would have, if that were implemented a couple of years ago, we'd have the Portland Building, County Courthouse, Convention Center Hotel, Portland International Airport expansion, and the real gold mine, I think, probably is harbor cleanup. We have huge opportunities for employment programs. We've got to know the mechanism that we're going to use, but I think the city could be considerably better off if we proceed where our 1% goes to some common continuity of opportunity, and then we get the rest of the regional partners together, and they're interested in that. It's just that we need to get the city together, and that, frankly, is what Dante is working on and we'll be back to talk about. So as I review all of that, I think there's a lot more agreement than disagreement. It's which alternative contracting. Probably there's some question about how do we proceed in the region, but those are not, that's not the whole apple. Really, there are a lot of agreements saying let's have aggressive goals, do the data right, and I think things have improved, and I think we've made them improved with the Portland Building and Washington Park project, but we can get better, and that's what Dante's working on, and we'll be out in the community to see how to improve whatever draft he now has. So having said that, I'd like to think that that'll help focus your thinking about what are we really looking at to improve? What have we learned about the pilots? And the Labor Management Committee, as Commissioner Fish said, has a presentation based on their experience. The Office of Management Finance hired a framework as a consultant to take a look at the review in terms of process and how they worked. And then I know there's invited testimony, and I have no idea how many others are testifying. But by the time we finish, I'd like to think you'll have learned something positive about this, and then Dante can say where he's headed.
Fred, one final point of clarification. Thank you for sort of laying out the flow of the hearing. I've received a couple of emails from people saying, in FX, saying that they don't want to see us today act on anything that's being accepted. My understanding is we're being asked to accept reports, not change policy. Is that correct?
That's correct. But I frankly don't know what difference it makes if you accept it or not. We've had the pilots and we've learned something. If you said you didn't accept it, okay. If you accepted it, okay. That doesn't change anything.
Well, just to be clear, our today's hearing is not for the purpose of beginning to draft a new CBA, CPP,
correct,
or any other policy.
That's correct.
It is to fulfill the requirements of the original Community Benefits Agreement resolution that said there would be a report back to council.
That's correct. And if this were non-controversial, you'd probably vote right now in the way that Teresa did it. She said, okay, we accept it. But it is controversial, so now you've got testimony. But at the end of that, I think it's really what we learn out of the process.
Well, and you've just given us your version of this, which is, so when we do make policy, what have we learned from this?
Right.
And I guess that's what I want to hear from the community as well, is that when we do make, as we do make policy,
correct.
What worked, what didn't work, what could work better, that's what we really need to know in this discussion, which we're having this afternoon. Right. The report itself is a report. We're not adopting new or old policy. We're not either
right.
affirming what we have been doing or saying we're going to do something different. But we want to hear about that.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Fred. So let me invite up John Gardner, Bill Kowalczyk, Connie Ashbrook, and Casey Bernard, who are going to give the LMCOC report. We've budgeted 20 minutes for this, so if the four of you could four of you can come forward.
Drag up an extra chair if there is one, and we can get all four of you up here at once. Steal somebody's chair. Thank you. I think we're good now. Okay. Thank you.
Here we go. And we're going to ask each of you to limit your initial comments to 3 minutes. Then we'll take some council questions and discussion. Who would like to start? Connie?
Thank you.
We have an order.
Okay. We have a video that we were hoping to play first.
Okay, great. Okay. Carla will probably need to assist with that unless you're really, really good at bad computers. So ours is particularly arcane.
Yeah,
and difficult. It takes a village to start our PowerPoints. Start button down there on the left.
All right.
The CBA offers a number of things that are different from traditional programs. One is community oversight. The community oversight piece is huge because you bring a number of organizations to the table with management that help provide input that historically has not been allowed or welcomed or even asked for at the table. Next, it provides a training fund, and that training fund is specifically designed to support outreach, recruitment, and training of folks that are in the pipeline that support the trades industry, all of the apprentices. You need to have some funds that help support those programs that are providing community members with these opportunities at a career.
Yeah, the CBA supports Portland Youth Builders. Without Portland Youth Builders, and I would have never got a job, I would have never got my GED, and I would have still been on welfare trying to figure out how I was going to take care of my kids. And, like, basically, I don't have to go find my work. My apprenticeship, my union finds my work for me.
There are folks in the community, there's groups in the community that are not involved in the CBA, and I think there's opportunity at the table for those voices to be heard. It's a very diverse coalition that makes up the CBA, and yes, unions are involved, but you know, we're just one of the partners in the overall agreement. You know, it's that diversity and the grassroots, the community that supports these agreements that really makes the agreement what it is, and it is something special. But it can only be that if we can get more involvement from the community.
Any contractor that wants to grow and increase their capacity and become successful, they should seek out the CBA. The CBA is providing everything that a contractor needs: knowledge, information, processes and procedures, what to do, what not to do, how to set up your chart of accounts for your QuickBooks, how to manage your business, not just jobs, but how to actually manage your business, how to become, to go from being a technician to becoming a manager on to becoming an entrepreneur. This is what the CBA offers.
I can't speak highly enough of it. I really mean that, because I think that for the first time, it's actually doing something meaningful and it's going to have long-lasting effect. And one of the things that I had noticed in the past in mentoring subcontractors and trying to get diversity in the workforce on our other projects is that you kind of at the end, you just go, well, did I really accomplish a whole heck of a lot? Or did I just go through the motions? Did I just meet some goals that we said we were going to meet? You know, it's one thing to say you're going to have a certain percentage of subcontracting with minority firms, women firms, disadvantaged firms. One thing to say it. It's a whole other thing at the end, not only doing a lot better, but seeing that these firms have gotten better and they're likely to be able to go forward as a better firm. But this takes years. This isn't just two projects that we did over the last couple of years. This is something that it takes years to do it, but this is the first program that I've seen that I think will actually be able to do something effective.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm Casey Bernard. I currently work for Work Systems, the local workforce development board, and I previously worked for the Emerald Cities Collaborative. Over the last 4 years, I provided significant staff and project support to the Labor Management Community Oversight Committee on the CBA pilot projects. You're going to hear from many people today with differing opinions, and I encourage you to listen closely over the next 20 minutes to your fellow community members who serve the CBA pilot projects as committed, open, and transparent partners with one common goal to make this city a more equitable place. In my opinion, the CBA has helped the city to move toward this goal, and only this brand of continued transparent oversight in partnership with community and labor will help to achieve the equity for all. I implore our city council members to embrace these community partners instead of turning the focus inward and pursuing equity without true community participation.
Thank you. Welcome. Whoever's next.
I'm continuing.
I'm sorry. I thought you were trying to cut you off.
No. So this next slide shows everybody a list of participants, the membership of the CBA Oversight Committee, which included city staff, community, training, union, and contractor partners, all working together to implement the CBA and deepen equity efforts. The group met throughout the pilot projects to review city and contractor data about diverse worker and contractor utilization and develop collaborative strategies to implement the CBA. And you may be wondering, why was the CBA needed in the first place? In plain terms, to help address historic inequities. As we all know, the City of Portland commissioned a 2009 disparity study, which showed statistically significant underutilization of minority and women-owned prime contractors on city construction projects. In 2012, in response to the findings of the study and the outcomes of the Fair Contracting Forum, the city passed a resolution titled Social Equity Contracting Strategy to Increase Minority-Owned, Women-Owned, and Emerging Small Business Utilization in City Contracting. This resolution applied aspirational goals of 18% minorities and 9% women on city-funded construction projects. And these goals apply broadly to all city-funded construction projects, including low bid, not just projects procured through alternative contract mechanisms like CMCG. On September 5th, 2012, I was here when this city council passed the CBA resolution. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the historic equity outcomes we've achieved over the last 4 years. So broadly, what's in the CBA? A focus on hiring workers from local low-income areas. Career pathways for current and future workers, that continuity of opportunity that Fred Miller discussed earlier. Workforce diversity goals to increase the diversity of the workforce, and also goals to increase the utilization of minority women-owned businesses. It also included training, outreach, contractor technical assistance, and compliance funds to support all of these activities and move the equity needle. Next slide. So these are some of our results. All of the data was provided by the city's procurement and contracting department as of April 2016, when both projects were substantially complete. The pilot projects achieved incredible results in workforce diversity. First, the CBA disaggregated the workforce goals to drill down on all levels of work, with specific goals for apprentice and journey level hours. This was done to monitor and ensure that diverse workers were being brought into the pipeline through apprenticeship, and that these workers were being retained and provided opportunities to continue work as more senior journey level workers. With goals including 20% of work going to apprentices, 18% to minority workers, and 9% to female workers, both CBA pilot projects were extremely successful on nearly all fronts. Just looking at Kelly Butte, 50% of apprentices were minorities, and 28% of apprentices were females, far exceeding the goals of 18% and 9% respectively. On Kelly Butte, 29% of journey workers were minorities, far exceeding the goal of 18%. And female workers, journey workers was the only area where the CBA failed to exceed its goals. This shortcoming was discussed in great length at the Oversight Committee table and was identified as an industry-wide problem that requires significant resources to move the needle. Partners believe that more CBA-type projects would provide just that opportunity. So the next slide shows some of the outcomes from the outreach and training funds. They supported the pre-apprenticeship training of 104 diverse workers. As you can see, 41% of the people trained were women, 41% were African American, and nearly 70% were people of color. These efforts enhanced the diversity of workers in the pipeline. Next slide. Regarding business diversity, the pilot projects also achieved incredible results for the utilization of underserved contractors, such as disadvantaged business enterprises, minority-owned business enterprises, and women-owned business enterprises. The CBA disaggregated the goals for these disadvantaged businesses from the goals of the emerging small businesses, and we believe that helped to achieve historic results. As you can see, across both CBA pilot projects, 26% of total dollars, almost $24 million, went to disadvantaged contractors, and there were 68 of these contractors working across both projects. To clear up one common misconception, both union and non-union disadvantaged contractors could and did participate on these projects. And to put all of this in context, we looked at the performance of the two pilot projects in 2013, after the pilots had been underway for only 8 months. We found that the amount of revenue earned by African American-owned firms on the CBA pilot projects at $5.9 million had already exceeded the total dollar amount of 5 years of contracts to African-American firms as identified in the disparity study in 2009. The CBA Disadvantaged Contractor Technical Assistance Fund supported TA to 26 disadvantaged firms who either worked on the CBA pilot projects, bid, or could have been bid on the projects. The TA program also helped disadvantaged contractors to build their capacity to do this work going forward and included hands-on business coaching and access to estimating and bidding software and training. Of the 26 disadvantaged businesses who received TA, 17 were non-union and 9 were union contractors. The contractors were surveyed and gave TA services high marks with an average score of 8.93 out of 10. In their satisfaction with TA services. We are very proud of these incredible equity results on the CBA pilot projects. We hope that the City Council and community members are too. I believe City Council had a long discussion about the city's efforts around construction equity during the ECPC presentation last week. As the city's own data showed, we still have a long way to go to meet the goals of the city's equity resolutions. Here, the CBA pilot projects have shown tangible progress towards equity. I ask that you build on these efforts and apply the lessons learned instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe a question now, because it's in your wheelhouse, but others may want to address it too. We heard some pretty disturbing reports at the ECPC discussion about utilization of workers in terms of the number of hours they actually got to work versus the fact that they were in the workforce for the project. You want to comment on that problem, or again, invite anyone to comment on that problem, but you know, numerically, obviously, it looks very good, but we heard that at least in some instances, not necessarily these projects, but in some instances, there was some gaming of the system and people didn't have really the hours that one would reasonably expect that they would have if they were in the workforce for a major construction project.
I can't comment on the specifics of that presentation, but I would say it highlights the need for looking at the detailed data as opposed to the aggregate percentages.
Right, sure.
And doing that on ideally a monthly basis with a shared oversight structure.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Great. Who'd like to go next?
Does everyone want a chance to speak, or is it a...
Yeah, all four of us will be speaking, and the only thing I would add to that last comment is that that is the history of Portland, where contractors move workers around based on the expectations of the public owners or the owners themselves. And so with the Oversight Committee, we had the ability to look at certified payrolls on a monthly basis to avoid those types of historical mistakes. So, I mean, again, that's why transparency and oversight is important.
All right, good. Good point. Thank you. Okay, who'd like to proceed?
Yes, I'd like to speak next, please. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor Hale. My name is Bill Kowalczyk. I was a non-union carpenter for 25 years, and I worked at Portland Youth Builders for 15 years as a construction manager and currently as a construction specialist. At PYB, I managed our BOLI certified pre-apprenticeship training program for low-income diverse youth, 17 to 24 years old. I want to discuss the historic nature of the LMCOC and its roots in Maui, the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity. The LMCOC is a historic governance structure of partnership between the city and the community. Please note the broad, slide please, the broad representation of the Maui partners. Bear in mind that these folks representing diverse sectors had significant differences to overcome. Two formative experiences contributed to the vision of the LMCOC. One was the South Waterfront experience, sitting on that oversight committee, and the Edith Green Wendell Wyatt Federal Project. So bringing these disparate groups of folks together, community and labor, together with city staff and contractor representatives into the LMCOC is a historic innovation. It reflects a wealth of social, technical, and political capital leveraged and united to address the nagging inequity in construction workforce and contracting. Unfortunately, this, which should be a kumbaya moment, has actually become a very frustrating experience for me. Many of you know the LMCOC got off to a bumpy start. In spite of the unanimous vote for the CBA by council, city staff appeared shocked at being thrown together with a committee of community and union folks. Leadership by Commissioner Leonard centered the LMCOC. In a meeting he convened, Leonard reminded all the participants of our mission to build equity and that we are all dedicated to excellent public works projects. The LMCOC returned to the table. We started from scratch, developing rules for conducting meetings, and over time, evolved efficient systems. Keep in mind, we had to set all of this up in real time. We received monthly data collected by the city and reviewed it with a general contractor, as was mentioned earlier. We worked together to meet or exceed CBA worker and construction thresholds. The contractor and subs provided the demand for the diverse workers. The unions and pre-apprenticeship programs helped provide the supply from alumni and current students seeking apprenticeship. The objective of the CBA was to deliver diversity to the industry, not necessarily these projects. The LMCOC process built relationships between industry partners, paving the way for future equity efforts. Remember, this was a pilot project anticipating future projects. This process, which began with tension and apprehension, steadily shifted to cooperation and collaboration between LMCOC members. However, as months went by, it became apparent that city staff were still not engaged. There was resistance by city staff on the LMCOC to make summary reports more understandable. city staff made repeated comments that we were getting the same results they always got, never providing evidence. Enthusiasm expressed by the contractor and other representatives of successful intervention in workforce problems was not shared by city representatives. I and others became concerned that some city staff had a vested interest in proving that their past equity work was the best that could be done. Our repeated attempts to arrange a meeting, to arrange a report to council through voting city representatives on the LMCOC were thwarted. We were told, wait until the projects are complete. We heard rumors from non-LMCOC staff that city officials were out to crush the CBA. Fred Miller, in an interview with the Willamette Week, fanned phony flames of conflict of interest, and Commissioner Fish promoted a different program than the CBA. No consultation with the LMCOC on this. Conveniently, 50% minority apprenticeship participation on Kelly Butte or 34% female apprenticeship participation on Interstate was not mentioned in this article. Are we to believe that that was just the reporter? We had to resort to individual meetings with commissioners and the mayor where we received mostly supportive platitudes. Our attempt months ago to plan for today's report to council with the LMCOC staff were first ignored, then delayed till 10 days ago. When we finally met, we were given an agenda allocating 10 minutes to our report after 4 years of work. Responding last week, the date of this report was changed, making it impossible for many of my students and staff to attend this council meeting because our annual fundraising events today. City staff were apparently directed to not participate in this LMCOC report. Meanwhile, the city staff forged ahead over all these months, shaping an equity strategy behind closed doors, without transparency, and marginalizing the successes of the CBA. As was mentioned, there's no input into the Portland Building Program. It was just delivered. Now we are told the city staff are presenting a new equity plan called the CEP today, written before and without the LMCOC's report to council, again, our first in 4 years, and buried in the evaluation are policy changes. Where is the inclusion? Where is the citizen city collaboration? It feels like all this work, all this capital is squandered. This feels like a political game to neutralize the LMCOC. And city staff hold all the cards, including setting the agenda. Here are my hopes for the future. Equity strategy must include real collaboration with the community and labor, not tokenism, not gestures after the fact, but real inclusion with city support, not subterfuge. I strongly urge the council not to accept the evaluation report. I urge the council to include Maui members of the LMCOC in any new equity plan. We paid our dues. Finally, the problem here is institutional inertia, in my opinion, and internal resistance to change. I heard a quote this morning on NPR. You can't solve the problem by using the same thinking that was the source of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, who's next? Okay, who'd like to go next?
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Commissioners.
Oh, push the button on the base of that, please, Connie. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Commissioners. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Connie Ashbrook. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Tradeswomen Incorporated, an organization that educates diverse women and girls about careers in the building, construction, manufacturing, utility, and other trades, as well as to help apprenticeship programs, employers, and government agencies diversify their trades workforces. I worked in construction for 17 years, mostly as an elevator constructor, before coming to lead Oregon Tradeswomen in 1996. I served on the Oregon State Apprenticeship and Training Council for 9 years, and for the past 6 years on the Federal Advisory Committee on Registered Apprenticeship. Oregon Tradeswomen has run our pre-apprenticeship program for women since 2004, and just this year graduated our 1,000th student. We have had a huge impact on the number of women working in the trades in Oregon. Over 7% of Oregon's apprentices are women as compared to 2.8% nationally. And the apprenticeship programs that we work with most closely have over 9% female apprentices. About one-third of Oregon's female apprentices are Oregon tradeswomen graduates, and some of them are here today, and I hope they would wave if that they are here. I'm very proud of them. I am here today to speak in favor of the Community Benefit Agreement and the whole process of the Labor Management Community Oversight Committee. I'm here on behalf of Oregon tradeswomen, but also on behalf of the other two pre-apprenticeship programs that were involved, Constructing Hope and Portland Youth Build. Together, we did amazing things on the two pilot projects. I want to say thank you very much to the City Council for the resources from the Community Benefit Agreement. Because of these resources, we were able to train 27 women to prepare them for the trades, including 24 of them being women of color. Today, three of them are working for the Portland Water Bureau as a water meter reader, a water service apprentice, and an environmental technician. 14 others are working as carpenters, electricians, laborers, tree trimmer, line worker, and steam fitter apprentices. Four others are working in trades-related fields, such as cabinet maker and electrical material handler. 21 out of 27 formerly low-income women now working in high-wage, highly skilled careers, thanks to your investment. You should be very proud. And there were similar results from Constructing Hope and Portland Youth Build. Overall, as you've seen, bringing 104 low-income and minority individuals out of poverty and into the middle class. The majority of them, City of Portland residents, now becoming taxpayers and ratepayers, helping to support our city. We also want to thank the city for the opportunity to sit on the Labor Management Community Oversight Committee. It really helped us bring the issues of a diverse workforce to greater prominence and attention on the project and to solve workforce diversity gaps in real time and achieve significant numbers on these projects. I can't begin to thank you enough for the opportunity to problem solve in real time during our monthly meetings and to make sure that the workforce diversity gaps were taken care of quickly. What usually happens is the gaps are reported at the end of a project when everybody says, oh, too bad, we tried. Well, together, we didn't just try, we did it. We should all be very proud. I want to dispel a few of the misconceptions that have been stated in various city reporting documents. At Oregon Tradeswomen, Constructing Hope, and Portland Youth Build, we pride ourselves on our integrity, on our service to the community, but also of our shepherding of the resources our funders give us to do our good work in the community. Through our professional audits, oversight from our board of directors, and quality reports, we provide careful stewardship of the public dollars to make sure they are used wisely and for their rightful purpose. And that outcomes are clearly reported on. Because of this integrity, we are offended that our integrity was questioned by the city. We carefully recused ourselves and made sure we were not part of discussion and decision making when we stood to have resources allocated to our organizations so that we could serve the community. We signed conflict of interest statements, acknowledging any potential conflict of interest. Our three organizations were at the table at the LMCOC because we are subject matter experts, the only ones locally providing this valuable service to the community and to the construction industry. Our expertise was needed, valued, and effective. A complaint has been made in a city report that few of the trainees funded by the Community Benefit Agreement worked on the Water Bureau projects. But we always knew we would be preparing for the future, building the pipeline of workers to be more robust so that they would be available for future city projects. And the CBA projects benefited from our past work. A full 40% of the women who worked on Interstate and Cali Butte were graduates of our pre-apprenticeship program. We properly made competitive bid on the dollars available. Work systems proposals and reporting documents, contrary to what have been said, are detailed and rigorous. Our organizations were selected because we had the needed expertise and capabilities. We agree that this was a pilot and the roles need to be clarified, that a more formal structure needs to be developed, and city staff struggled with the demands on their time and need the additional time to work on these. We agree that examining and learning from the best practices and transparency of data of Seattle, Boston, and other communities would strengthen the city's workforce program. Unfortunately, the results give the impression that the City of Portland does not care about workforce equity on their public projects. We heard that the city is working on a new plan. Thank you for keeping trying. We wish that those plans had been in place on the Portland building and the Washington Reservoir in as in-depth and quality as they were on these two pilot community benefit agreement projects. Our concern that any plan needs to include greater efforts towards workforce diversity, not just contracting diversity. Today's construction workers are the business owners of the future. Unless diverse men and women get to become apprentices, become journey level, have opportunities to move into supervisory roles, we will not have a robust and diverse contractor pool. Please do not accept the city pilot's report as written. The City of Portland needs to fully engage with the community in a meaningful way before making significant policy decisions about this tool. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Excellent. Folks, again, give hands or thumbs up, but let's hear people. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor. My name is John Gardner, and I serve as staff or cause during the course of the Community Benefit Agreement. And I'm honored to be here to celebrate the game-changing program that was the City of Portland's first use of a Community Benefit Agreement on city-funded projects. Before I go further, I agree with what was said earlier by Fred Miller and others in terms of Teresa Elliott and her amazing qualifications and jobs over the last 4 years. And I only say that because I'm going to be using the term city staff a lot. And when I use the term city staff, it's not necessarily specific individuals. It's referring to a culture of feigned transparency and collaboration that unfortunately occurred after the fact outside of the LMCOC meetings, which, again, is why I think we're here today. So to be clear, I'm not here to call into question why, although you as a council unanimously approved the CBA resolution in 2012 and asked staff to consider applying the CBA template to other projects 4 years ago, staff ignored that advice or that guidance, and projects like the Water Bureau Reservoir Project and the Portland Building were never considered. I'm also not here to complain, like others have, in terms of the lack of willingness from city staff to allow us to bring our progress reports, which you asked for 4 years ago, and give you updated context for how well we were doing and how we were achieving those goals. And finally, I'm not here even to ask you or your staff to report on your overall progress related to increasing minority contracting and workforce utilization outside of the CBA, because remember, your first commitment was to increase contracting and workforce utilization. The CBA was only a contracting template to use to that end. So I am curious about how things have gone outside of the CBA, but that's not why we're here. Now, I'm here to give additional context to one of the City of Portland's greatest achievements in equity, diversity, inclusivity, transparency, and shared economic growth, which I feel the city can and should take credit for. So additional sort of background for all this. You know, what happens after the celebration and the parade, which we had here 4 years ago, was I was part of a negotiating team that met with the prime contractor and city employees to discuss the operational implementation of a brand new contracting agreement. Now, you should acknowledge the conflict and anxiety for that group who had already received contracts, right? The CBA was something that happened after the fact to two fairly large contracts in terms of, we know you have a contract awarded, but here's what we need you to do. We need you to look at all the contract documents, your approach and your proposal, and infuse this high road standard approach to ensuring community equity and transparency. And so as much as you think that's a good thing, if you're on the other side of this fence, that's a lot of work. And it created a lot of anxiety. I believe this added work and an expectation of transparency put an initial cloud over the project in our first few months of meetings. And although the prime contractor in time showed amazing leadership in implementing the CBA, I felt that for some project staff, the negative assumptions of this new contracting method ultimately never went away and unfortunately polluted much of the information that you and other city staff have received about the progress and the work of the CBA over the last 4 years. I'd also like to talk about city oversight. I can't help but notice a lack of city staff standing arm in arm with us. This was a joint community and city project, and the fact that we have segmented our presentation is just an example of sort of the lack of transparent collaboration and collegiality that although we enjoyed when we celebrated the monthly successes, as we got near to the end, the rationale of why we weren't looking at other programs speaks to me that we really weren't the team I thought we were over those 4 years. Make no mistake, the city oversaw the implementation of the CBA pilots of both projects. They were the first and last word. They were the decider. Whether it was a conversation about contracting, project phases, assessing damages, approving contracts, and clearly communicating to council. The public owner member of the LMCOC, which is just a transparency board, was the City of Portland. They had the last say. So this idea that some volunteer committee was pushing the billion-dollar enterprise that is the City of Portland around is crazy. In terms of project development, I agree with Mr. Miller's comment. This was supposed to be a pilot, but it was not supposed to be implemented in a vacuum. And unfortunately, very soon after the project was let, we began hearing from staff that we're not going to do anything else, although you asked them to, until this project is done, which, again, was not in the minutes of the resolution passed 4 years ago, but it was the feedback that we received. And so unlike a pilot project, the feedback that I have heard over the last few years has not been about what we were learning or how it could be systemized to help improve overall city contracting efforts. The feedback was much more like, when will this end so we can get back to business as usual? In hindsight, looking back on what's transpired, I feel like we never really had a chance. Now, by no means do I believe the CBA was perfect. And there is a lot I agree with in terms of the city's procured evaluator, an evaluation and a procurement I never saw until it was actually secured by a partner, which is strange because of all of our procurements were public. But if you compare...
A second, I don't think your slides are up. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, sorry. Oh, they're amazing.
There we go. Thank you.
Deep. So, again, by no means do I believe the CBA was perfect, and there was a lot I agree with in terms of the city's procured evaluator. But if you compare both reports, although there's a lot of overlap, there's also a lot of difference. And even though we're talking about the same projects, it almost feels like a tale of two cities, with one coming from the perspective of what did we learn and what can we improve, and the other reinforcing a narrative that the project had multiple problems and was a bad idea from the start. So let's get back to business as usual, because we know best. So the LMCOC was important but had too many responsibilities. I agree. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. But I also believe that it's a best practice for community and stakeholder oversight, especially with the lack of coordination and infrastructure provided by city staff. COS was only intended to be a training fund administrator, but took on other responsibilities for all three funds, primarily due to the city's lack of management and leadership. CBA governance provisions created potential for conflict of interest. Untrue. Although public contracting is rife with potential conflicts of interest, as many of you know, our process included safeguards like recusals and conflict of interest statements on all of our procurement scoring documents. For example, and I would encourage you to look at this and tell me what about this isn't clear in terms of recusal or acknowledging potential conflicts of interest. And this is one example of what your staff signed as they participated on the procurement processes. CBA program administration costs were relatively high. Untrue. The city agreed to the administration fees, which included personnel, operating, administration, and indirect rates to cover all the costs to building out the procurements, managing the resources, taking on all three funds, and operationalizing the project. I would love, and I try to do research about the city's internal costs as it relates to managing programs. So the idea that the city could do this for less, especially in terms of a pilot, I would love to see as a taxpayer. I think you got a great bargain and a great deal, and I think a lot of what we develop can be used to bring down the costs on future models. Startup and admin costs in TA programs may have outweighed short-term benefits. Tell that to Nathaniel Hartley, who you saw in the video, and other MDB contractors that scored the service incredibly high. New models do tend to cost more to develop, but taking the lessons learned and the proven technical assistance approach meant to be applied to additional efforts will save money in the long term. One thing I'd like to say is the city has, for years, way beyond the CBA, provided technical assistance to minority firms. But all those efforts were found lacking in your 2009 disparity study. So the idea to sort of judge a new approach where contractors were served and were appreciated the service when your own house is not in order is surprising to me. One thing I obviously agree with is that your evaluator find was procurements use good practices. I would argue if you look at the report, they maintain that we use best practices in procurement. And so that was one of the things that obviously I personally took offense to, because we tried to establish a very high mark for transparency and clarity in order to sort of let it be used again and again. And I think if you look at the documents, many of them can be updated and used for any future investments. CBA fund contracts, CBA 1% fund contracts were not performance-based. Actually, your own report states that training contracts had enrollment, training, and completion goals, and the community construction program used well-established and time-tested service models that had been successfully used prior to the establishment of the CBA, and that the program exceeded originally and revised program enrollment goals. One thing to note is when someone spoke about the 104 scholarships that the CBA provided, when we contracted with the CBO training providers, we only contracted for about 80 scholarships. So not only did they overperform their contracted goals, but they leveraged their own infrastructure to bring additional opportunities to others in the community. So the idea that we didn't pay for actual services, again, it's crazy and it's disappointing. Compliance activities were duplicated, and not all compliance funds were spent. So a finding is that we didn't spend all the money. I think someone said this earlier. So we save money because I agree. The city has good compliance resources available. So there is some duplication. And that's why early on we decided not to take any program administration funds from any of the direct services, but instead city staff came back to you all and asked to take some money out of the compliance fund to fund the administration of the project, which is, I think, a great best practice model that doesn't reduce the actual services to minority contractors or workers. Comparable projects also achieve good results against the CBA. So this slide's a little hard to see, but my understanding is this is what happened when the city staff were looking for other examples amongst the city's history of contracting to show how good you do outside of a CBA. And what we have here on these six examples is the Interstate CBA pilot, your Southwest Moody Ave streetcar project, your Kelly Butte CBA pilot, streetcar loop, and Balch and Mount Tabor. So I would first say Balch and Mount Tabor are not comparable. And if you look in within your own evaluator's report, you'll see other examples, whether it's contracting or utilization, that those projects didn't achieve the same results. I would further suggest that if you're looking at Southwest Moody Avenue and Streetcar Loop, those were TriMet partnered projects where TriMet applied to the FTA and served as a pass-through to fund those projects. But in doing so, the city of Portland had to achieve the TriMet's DBE program goals, which were actually set higher than the CBA goals for DBE participation. So the idea that the city of Portland has this long history of diversification in terms of utilization and contracting is just not true, and that's why we're here in the first place. So these lessons are taken verbatim from the evaluated report, who I believe you'll hear from next. My point is that these are the real critical elements that we all agree need to be included in any agreement going forward. And I agree with Fred, there's some overlap and there's some agreement. And it is clearly described in your own evaluation. Yet when you look at the report that's being presented today, none of those components, these components are included that you're being asked to pass. And I know there's some confusion about what we're being asked to pass and what it really means. It means you sanctify the findings of the CBA, which don't actually speak to best practices that your own evaluation asks you to include in any models going forward. And that's why I think there's so much pushback today, because it's not clear what it means to canonize or to agree with the report you're preparing to accept. None of these real lessons learned regarding the success and challenges of the CBA model are being carried forward, and if anything, they are being intentionally dropped in the proposing next steps. This is both confusing and concerning. And I would just, for time purposes, I won't go through all of these, although you can see this is about goals. This is about accountability. This is about participation of key stakeholders. I did look at the report and the idea that you may convene an advisory committee. I mean, what a strike against transparency and openness. And I think that is one of the best practices. So the idea that you may or may not do that, or that you'll only apply equity goals to CMGC projects as opposed to what you've already committed, which is anytime you spend dollars over a certain amount, you're going to champion equity. I mean, that's not just a retreat. It's almost a betrayal. So because these lessons learned are not explicitly outlined in the report as written and are not at all reflected in the recommendations found therein, I encourage council to take a step back, not accept the report as written, and work more closely with community partners to come up with a summary report that accurately reflects the CBA pilot results and clear next steps based on fact and goodwill. Also, my recommendations are, as someone who's been through this and lived through this, both as an outsider and now as an insider in my role at TriMet, I encourage you to continue pursuing high road construction and career pathways investments through a collaborative and transparent process, which again is not what your report speaks to, even the new program model. I encourage you to continue to set clear and explicit goal settings and have real monitoring, so the idea of wage theft or gaming the system and moving workers around where they don't actually get moving up through apprenticeship is a thing of the past, because it's happening. Mostly outside of the CBA, by the way, and that you have clear engagement and commitment secured by all relevant parties. That includes community-based organizations, training organizations, labor, fund managers, whatever it looks like, and that you have built-in mechanisms that we had to develop in the CBA to support the necessary community capacity building. I also will encourage you to identify an external neutral fund administrator, whether it's BOLI, the Oregon Employment Department, or your Workforce Development Board. Because the idea that conflicts of interest can be avoided are inherent, either in this body or others. You need to find someone neutral who can either leverage their own resources or can be that table to have this conversation that can be overseen by city staff. But A, it's too expensive for you to administer this fund. B, there's no way to avoid the conflicts of interest that I'm sure you're going to hear across the next few presentations in terms of all of the different voices who want a role in this. They can all be at the table, but you need a neutral partner to administer the funds, and that you continue to have ongoing and meaningful oversight and accountability. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel?
So, Mayor, I have one question, and frankly, I appreciate the testimony in it. What I want to separate out is the testimony that anticipates the next presentation, because a number of the concerns you've raised are to the independent evaluation and those findings, and probably in retrospect we should have flipped this so we heard that first and then heard your rebuttal. But that's a big piece of what I heard, and I've taken pretty good notes on that. I've heard some references to the level of cooperation and participation by city staff. Obviously, that's something we take very seriously. It is somewhat inconsistent with what we heard from ECPC last week or the week before in terms of outcomes in this project. And I have a hard time reconciling the notion that there was half-hearted participation on the one hand, and yet we got great results. So maybe that means we could have gotten even better results. But there's a contradiction there. There's a contradiction. But I'm going to go back to something that someone said that I think frames for me the difficulty in reconciling a number of things we're going to be talking about today. And so I'm going to offer anyone on the panel a chance to respond to this. And that is, we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And I take it that is the verdict on the community benefits plan that was negotiated with the community and accepted by this council, and there's going to be the guiding principle for the work we're going to do in Washington Park. Now, throwing the baby out with the bathwater is a very colorful and very resonant expression. And it suggests that we have somehow abandoned some basic principles along the way. And as the commissioner in charge who cares deeply about this issue, I don't understand that. And I want to give